leading them to seek freedom and fair kingdoms in Middle-earth. And indeed, there followed after long years of peace, while their swords fenced Beleriand from the ruin of Morgoth, and his power was shut behind his gates. In those days there was joy beneath the new sun and moon, and all the land was glad. But still the shadow brooded in the north. And when again 30 years had passed, Turgon, son of Fingolfin, left Nevrast, where he dwelt, and sought out Finrod, his friend, upon the island of Tol Sirion, and they journeyed southward along the river, being weary for a while of the northern mountains. And as they journeyed, night came upon them, beyond the meres of twilight beside the waters of Sirion, and they slept upon his banks beneath the summer stars. But Ulmo, coming up the river, laid a deep sleep upon them and heavy dreams, and the trouble of the dreams remained after they awoke. But neither said aught to the other, for their memory was not clear, and each believed that Ulmo had sent a message to him alone. But unquiet was upon them ever after, and doubt of what should befall, and they wandered often alone in untrodden lands, seeking far and wide for places of hidden strength. For it seemed to each that he was bidden to prepare for a day of evil, and to establish a retreat, lest Morgoth should burst from Angband and overthrow the armies of the north. Now on a time Finrod and Galadriel his sister were the guests of Thingol their kinsman in Doriath. Then Finrod was filled with wonder at the strength and majesty of Menegroth, its treasuries and armouries and its many pillared halls of stone. And it came into his heart that he would build wide halls behind ever-guarded gates in some deep and secret place beneath the hills. Therefore he opened his heart to Thingol, telling him of his dreams. And Thingol spoke to him of the deep gorge of the river Narog, and the caves under the high Faroth in its steep western shore. And when he departed, he gave him guides to lead him to that place of which few yet knew. Thus Finrod came to the caverns of Narog, and began to establish there deep halls and armouries, after the fashion of the mansions of Menegroth. And that stronghold was called Nargothrond. In that labour, Finrod was aided by the dwarves of the Blue Mountains, and they were rewarded well, for Finrod had brought more treasures out of Tirion than any other of the princes of the Noldor, and in that time was made for him the Nauglamir, the necklace of the dwarves, most renowned of their works in the elder days. It was a carcanet of gold, and set therein were gems uncounted from Valinor. But it had a power within it, so that it rested lightly on its wearer as a strand of flax, and whatsoever neck it clasped, it sat always with grace and loveliness. There in Nargothrond, Finrod made his home with many of his people, and he was named in the tongue of the dwarves Felagund, hewer of caves, and that name he bore thereafter until his end. But Finrod Felagund was not the first to dwell in the caves beside the river Narog. Galadriel his sister went not with him to Nargothrond, for in Doriath dwelt Celeborn, kinsman of Thingol, and there was great love between them. Therefore she remained in the hidden kingdom, and abode with Melian, and of her learned great lore and wisdom concerning Middle-earth. But Turgon remembered the city set upon a hill, Tirion the Fair, with its tower and tree, and he found not what he sought, but returned to Nevrast, and sat in peace in Vinyamar by the shores of the sea. And in the next year Ulmo himself appeared to him, and bade him go forth again alone into the Vale of Sirion. And Turgon went forth, and by the guidance of Ulmo he discovered the hidden vale of Tumladen in the encircling mountains, in the midst of which there was a hill of stone. Of this he spoke to none as yet, but returned once more to Nevrast, and there began in his secret councils to devise the plan of a city after the manner of Tirion upon Tunnar, for which his heart yearned in exile. Now Morgoth, believing the report of his spies that the lords of the Noldor were wandering abroad with little thought of war, made trial of the strength and watchfulness of his enemies. Once more, with little warning, his might was stirred, and suddenly there were earthquakes in the north, and fire came from fissures in the earth, and the iron mountains vomited flame, and orcs poured forth across the plain of Ard Galan. Thence they thrust down the pass of Sirion in the west, and in the east they burst through the land of Maglor in the gap between the hills of Maedhros and the outliers of the Blue Mountains. But Fingolfin and Maedhros were not sleeping, and while others sought out the scattered bands of orcs that strayed in Beleriand and did great evil, they came upon the main host from either side as it was assaulting Dothonion. And they defeated the servants of Morgoth, and pursuing them across Ard Galen, destroyed them utterly, to the least and last, within sight of Angband's gates. That was the third great battle of the wars of Beleriand, and it was named Dagor Aglareb, the Glorious Battle. A victory it was, and yet a warning, and the princes took heed of it, and thereafter drew closer their leaguer, and strengthened and ordered their watch, setting the siege of Angband, which lasted well nigh 400 years of the sun. For a long time after Dagor Aglareb, no servant of Morgoth would venture from his gates, for they feared the lords of the Noldor. And Fingolfin boasted that save by treason among themselves, Morgoth could never again burst from the leaguer of the Eldar, nor come upon them at unawares. Yet the Noldor could not capture Angband, nor could they regain the Silmarils. And war never wholly ceased in all that time of the siege, for Morgoth devised new evils, and ever and anon he would make trial of his enemies. Nor could the stronghold of Morgoth be ever wholly encircled, for the iron mountains from whose great curving wall the towers of Thangorodrim were thrust forward defended it upon either side, and were impassable to the Noldor, because of their snow and ice. Thus in his rear, and to the north, Morgoth had no foes, and by that way his spies at times went out, and came by devious routes into Beleriand. And desiring above all to sow fear and disunion among the Eldar, he commanded the orcs to take alive any of them that they could, and bring them bound to Angband. And some he so daunted by the terror of his eyes that they needed no chains more, but walked ever in fear of him, doing his will wherever they might be. Thus Morgoth learned much of all that had befallen since the rebellion of Feanor, and he rejoiced, seeing therein the seed of many dissensions among his foes. When nearly 100 years had run since the Dagor Aglareb, Morgoth endeavoured to take Fingolfin at unawares, for he knew of the vigilance of Maedhros. And he sent forth an army into the White North, and they turned west and again south, and came down the coasts to the Firth of Drengist, by the route that Fingolfin followed from the grinding ice. Thus they would enter into the realm of Hithlum from the west. But they were espied in time, and Fingon fell upon them among the hills at the head of the Firth, and most of the orcs were driven into the sea. This was not reckoned among the great battles, for the orcs were not in great number, and only a part of the people of Hithlum fought there. But thereafter there was peace for many years, and no open assault from Angband. For Morgoth perceived now that the orcs unaided were no match for the Noldor, and he sought in his heart for new counsel. Again, after 100 years, Glaurung, the first of the Uruloki, the fire drakes of the north, issued from Angband's gates by night. He was yet young and scarce half grown, for long and slow is the life of the dragons, but the elves fled before him to Eredwethryn, and Dothonion in dismay. And he defiled the fields of Ard Galan. Then Fingon, prince of Hithlum, rode against him with archers on horseback, and hemmed him round with a ring of swift riders. And Glaurung could not endure their darts, being not yet come to his full armoury, and he fled back to Angband. and came not forth again for many years. Fingon won great praise, and the Noldor rejoiced, for few foresaw the full meaning and threat of this new thing. But Morgoth was ill-pleased that Glaurung had disclosed himself over soon, and after his defeat there was the long peace of well-nigh 200 years. In all that time there were but affrays on the marches, and all Beleriand prospered and grew rich. Behind the guard of their armies in the north, the Noldor built their dwellings and their towers, and many fair things they made in those days, and poems and histories and books of lore. In many parts of the land, the Noldor and the Sindar became welded into one people, and spoke the same tongue. Though this difference remained between them, the Noldor had the greater power of mind and body, and were the mightier warriors and sages, and they built with stone and loved the hill slopes and open lands. But the Sindar had the fairer voices, and were more skilled in music, save only Maglor, son of Feanor, and they loved the woods and the riversides. And some of the grey elves still wandered far and wide without settled abode, and they sang as they went. Of Beleriand and its realms. This is the fashion of the lands into which the Noldor came in the north of the western regions of Middle-earth in the ancient days. And here also is told of the manner in which the chieftains of the Eldar held their lands and the leaguer upon Morgoth after the Dagor Aglareb, the third battle in the wars of Beleriand. In the north of the world, Melkor had in the ages past reared Ered Engrin, the Iron Mountains, as a fence to his citadel of Utumno. And they stood upon the borders of the region of everlasting cold, in a great curve from east to west. Behind the walls of Ered Engrin in the west, where they bent back northwards, Melkor built another fortress as a defence against assault that might come from Valinor. And when he came back to Middle-earth, as has been told, he took up his abode in the endless dungeons of Angband, the Hells of Iron. For in the War of the Powers, the Valar, in their haste to overthrow him in his great stronghold of Utumno, did not wholly destroy Angband, nor search out all its deep places. Beneath Ered Engrin, he made a great tunnel, which issued south of the mountains, and there he made a mighty gate. But above this gate, and behind it even to the mountains, he piled the thunderous towers of Thangorodrim, that were made of the ash and slag of his subterranean furnaces, and the vast refuse of his tunnelings. They were black and desolate, and exceedingly lofty, and smoke issued from their tops dark and foul upon the northern sky. Before the gates of Angband, filth and desolation spread southward for many miles over the wide plain of Ard-Garlan. But after the coming of the sun, rich grass arose there, and while Angband was besieged and its gates shut, there were green things even among the pits and broken rocks before the doors of hell. To the west of Thangorodrim lay Hissilome, the land of mist, for so it was named by the Noldor in their own tongue because of the clouds that Morgoth sent thither during their first encampment. Hithlum it became in the tongue of the Sindar that dwelt in those regions. It was a fair land while the siege of Angband lasted, although its air was cool and winter there was cold. In the west it was bounded by Ered Lomin, the echoing mountains that marched near the sea, and in the east and south by the great curve of Ered Wethrin, the shadowy mountains that looked across Ard-Garlan and the Vale of Sirion. Fingolfin and Fingon his son held Hithlum, and the most part of Fingolfin's folk dwelt in Mithrim about the shores of the great lake. To Fingon was assigned Dorlomin, that lay to the west of the mountains of Mithrim. But their chief fortress was at Aethel Sirion, in the east of Ered Wethrim, whence they kept watch upon Ard-Garlan. And their cavalry rode upon that plain even to the shadow of Thangorodrim, for from few their horses had increased swiftly, and the grass of Ard-Garlan was rich and green. Of those horses, many of the sires came from Valinor, and they were given to Fingolfin by Maethros, in atonement of his losses, for they had been carried by ship to Loscar. West of Dor Lomin, beyond the echoing mountains which south of the Firth of Drengist marched inland, lay Nevrast, that signifies the hither shore in the Sindarin tongue. That name was given at first to all the coastlands south of the Firth, but afterwards only to the land whose shores lay between Drengist and Mount Taras. There for many years was the realm of Turgon the Wise, son of Fingolfin, bounded by the sea and by Ered Lomin, and by the hills which continued the walls of Ered Wethrin westward, from Ivrin to Mount Taras, which stood upon a promontory. By some Nevrast was held to belong rather to Beleriand than to Hithlum, for it was a milder land, watered by the wet winds from the sea, and sheltered from the cold north winds that blew over Hithlum. It was a hollow land, surrounded by mountains and great coast cliffs higher than the plains behind, and no river flowed thence. And there was a great mere in the midst of Nevrast, with no certain shores, being encircled by wide marshes. Linewen was the name of that mere, because of the multitude of birds that dwelt there, of such as love tall reeds and shallow pools. At the coming of the Noldor, many of the grey elves lived in Nevrast near to the coasts, and especially about Mount Taras in the southwest. For to that place Ulmo and Ossa had been wont to come in days of old. All that people took Torgon for their lord, and the mingling of the Noldor and the Sindar came to pass soonest there, and Torgon dwelt long in those halls that he named Vinyamar, under Mount Taras beside the sea. South of Ard Galen, the great highland named Dorthonion stretched for 60 leagues from west to east. Great pine forests it bore, especially on its northern and western sides. By gentle slopes from the plain, it rose to a bleak and lofty land, where lay many tarns at the feet of bare tors, whose heads were higher than the peaks of Ered Wethrin. But southward, where it looked towards Doriath, it fell suddenly in dreadful precipices. From the northern slopes of Dorthonion, Angrod and Aegnor, sons of Finarfin, looked out over the fields of Ard Galen, and were the vassals of their brother Finrod, lord of Nargothrond. Their people were few, for the land was barren, and the great highlands behind were deemed to be a bulwark that Morgoth would not likely seek to cross. Between Dorthonion and the shadowy mountains there was a narrow vale, whose sheer walls were clad with pines, but the vale itself was green, for the river Sirion flowed through it, hastening towards Beleriand. Finrod held the pass of Sirion, and upon the isle of Tol Sirion, in the midst of the river, he built a mighty watchtower, Minas Tirith. But after Nargothrond was made, he committed that fortress mostly to the keeping of Orodreth, his brother. Now the great and fair country of Beleriand lay on either side of the mighty river Sirion, renowned in song, which rose at Aethal Sirion, and skirted the edge of Ard Galen ere he plunged through the pass, becoming ever fuller with the streams of the mountains. Thence he flowed south for 130 leagues, gathering the waters of many tributaries, until with a mighty flood he reached his many mouths and sandy delta in the Bay of Balar. And following Sirion from north to south, there lay upon the right hand in West Beleriand the forest of Brethil between Sirion and Teiglin, and then the realm of Nargothrond between Teiglin and Narog. And the river Narog rose in the falls of Ivrin in the southern face of Dor Lomin, and flowed some 80 leagues ere he joined Sirion in Nan Tathrin, the land of willows. South of Nan Tathrin was a region of meads filled with many flowers, where few folk dwelt. And beyond lay the marshes and isles of reed about the mouths of Sirion, and the sands of his delta empty of all living things save birds of the sea. But the realm of Nargothrond extended also west of Narog to the river Nenning, that reached the sea at Eglarest, and Finrod became the overlord of all the elves of Beleriand between Sirion and the sea, save only in the Falas. There dwelt those of the Sindar who still loved ships, and Círdan the shipbuilder was their lord. But between Círdan and Finrod there was friendship and alliance, and with the aid of the Noldor, the havens of Brithombar and Eglarest were built anew. Behind their great walls they became fair towns and harbours with quays and piers of stone. Upon the cape west of Eglarest, Finrod raised the tower of Barad Nimras to watch the western sea, though needlessly as it proved, for at no time ever did Morgoth essay to build ships or to make war by sea. Water all his servants shunned, and to the sea none would willingly go nigh, save in dire need. With the aid of the elves of the havens, some of the folk of Nargothrond built new ships, and they went forth and explored the great isle of Balar, thinking there to prepare a last refuge if evil came. But it was not their fate that they should ever dwell there. Thus the realm of Finrod was the greatest by far, though he was the youngest of the great lords of the Noldor, Fingolfin, Fingon, and Maedhros, and Finrod Felagund. But Fingolfin was held overlord of all the Noldor, and Fingon after him, though their own realm was but the northern land of Hithlum. Yet their people were the most hardy and valiant, most feared by the orcs, and most hated by Morgoth. Upon the left hand of Sirion lay East Beleriand, at its widest 100 leagues from Sirion to Gelion, and the borders of Osiriand. And first, between Sirion and Mindeb, lay the empty land of Dimbar, under the peaks of the Chrysagrim, abode of eagles. Between Mindeb and the upper waters of Esgalduin lay the No Land of Nan Dungortheb. And that region was filled with fear, for upon its one side the power of Melian fenced the north march of Doriath, but on the other side the sheer precipices of Ered Gogoroth, mountains of terror, fell down from high Dothonion. Thither, as was earlier told, Ungoliant had fled from the whips of the Balrogs, and there she dwelt a while, filling the ravines with her deadly gloom. And there still, when she had passed away, her foul offspring lurked and wove their evil nets, and the thin waters that spilled from Ered Gorgoroth were defiled and perilous to drink, for the hearts of those that tasted them were filled with shadows of madness and despair. All living things else shunned that land, and the Noldor would pass through Nan Dungortheb only at great need, by paths near to the borders of Doriath, and furthest from the haunted hills. That way was made long before, in the time ere Morgoth returned to Middle-earth, and if one fared upon it, he came eastwards to Esgalduin, where still there stood in the days of the siege the stone bridge of Iant Iawr. Thence he passed through Dor Dinan, the silent land, and crossing the Arosiach, which signifies the fords of Aros, came to the north marches of Beleriand, where dwelt the sons of Feanor. Southward lay the guarded woods of Doriath, abode of Thingol, the hidden king, into whose realm none passed save by his will. Its northern and lesser part, the forest of Neldoreth, was bounded east and south by the dark river Esgalduin, which bent westward in the midst of the land, and between Aros and Esgalduin lay the denser and greater woods of Regian. Upon the southern bank of Esgalduin, where it turned westward towards Sirion, were the caves of Menegroth, and all Doriath lay east of Sirion, save for a narrow region of woodland between the meeting of Teiglin and Sirion, and the meres of twilight. By the people of Doriath this wood was called Nivrim, the West March. Great oak trees grew there, and it also was encompassed within the girdle of Melian, that so some portion of Sirion, which she loved in reverence of Ulmo, should be wholly under the power of Thingol. In the southwest of Doriath, where Aros flowed into Sirion, lay great pools and marshes on either side of the river, which halted there in his course and strayed in many channels. That region was named Aelin Uial, the Twilight Meres, for they were wrapped in mists, and the enchantment of Doriath lay over them. Now all the northern part of Beleriand sloped southward to this point, and then for a while was plain, and the flood of Sirion was stayed. But south of Aelin Uial the land fell suddenly and steeply, and all the lower fields of Sirion were divided from the upper fields by this fall, which to one looking from the south northward appeared as an endless chain of hills running from Eglarest beyond Narog in the west to Ammon Ereb in the east within far sight of Gelion. Narog came through these hills in a deep gorge and flowed over rapids, but had no fall, and on its western bank the land rose into the great wooded highlands of Tauren Faroth. On the west side of this gorge, where the short and foaming stream Ringwill tumbled headlong into Narog from the high Faroth, Finrod established Nargothrond. But some 25 leagues east of the gorge of Nargothrond, Sirion fell from the north in a mighty fall below the meres, and then he plunged suddenly underground into great tunnels that the weight of his falling waters delved. And he issued again 3 leagues southward with great noise and smoke through rocky arches at the foot of the hills, which were called the Gates of Sirion. This dividing fall was named Andram, the Long Wall, from Nargothrond to Ramdal, the Wall's End, in East Beleriand. But in the east it became ever less sheer, for the Vale of Gelion sloped steadily southward, and Gelion had neither fall nor rapids throughout his course, but was ever swifter than was Sirion. Between Ramdal and Gelion there stood a single hill of great extent and gentle slopes, but seeming mightier than it was, for it stood alone. And that hill was named Ammon Ereb. Upon Ammon Ereb died Denethor, lord of the Nandor, that dwelt in Osiriand, who marched to the aid of Thingol against Morgoth in those days when the orcs first came down in force and broke the starlit peace of Beleriand, and upon that hill Maedhros dwelt after the great defeat. But south of the Andram, between Sirion and Gelion, was a wild land of tangled forest in which no folk went, save here and there a few dark elves wandering. Tower Im Dwinath it was named, the forest between the rivers. Gelion was a great river, and he rose in 2 sources, and had at first 2 branches. Little Gelion that came from the hill of Himring, and greater Gelion that came from Mount Rerir. From the meeting of his arms, he flowed south for 40 leagues before he found his tributaries, and before he found the sea he was twice as long as Sirion, though less wide and full. For more rain fell in Hithlum and Dorthonion when Sirion drew his waters than in the east. From Ered Luin flowed the 6 tributaries of Gelion: Askar, that was after named Rathloriel, Thalos, Legolin, Brilthor, Dwilwen, and Adurant, swift and turbulent streams falling steeply from the mountains. And between Askar in the north and Adurant in the south, and between Gelion and Ered Luin, lay the far green country of Osiriand, the land of 7 rivers. Now at a point nearly midway in its course, the stream of Adurant divided and then joined again, and the island that its waters enclosed was named Tol Galen, the Green Isle. There Beren and Luthien dwelt after their return. In Osiriand dwelt the green elves in the protection of their rivers. For after Sirion, Ulmo loved Gelion above all the waters of the western world. The woodcraft of the elves of Osiriand was such that a stranger might pass through their land from end to end and see none of them. They were clad in green in spring and summer, and the sound of their singing could be heard even across the waters of Gelion. Wherefore the Noldor named that country Lindon, the land of music. And the mountains beyond they named Ered Lindon, for they first saw them from Osiriand. East of Dothonion, the marches of Beleriand were most open to attack, and only hills of no great height guarded the Vale of Gelion from the north. In that region, upon the march of Maedhros, and in the lands behind, dwelt the sons of Feanor with many people, and their riders passed often over the vast northern plain, Lothlan the wide and empty, east of Ard-Garlan, lest Morgoth should attempt any sortie towards East Beleriand. The chief citadel of Maedhros was upon the hill of Himring, the ever-cold, and that was wide-shouldered, bare of trees, and flat upon its summit, surrounded by many lesser hills. Between Himring and Dorthonion there was a pass exceeding steep upon the west, and that was the pass of Aglon, and was a gate unto Doriath, and a bitter wind blew ever through it from the north. But Celegorm and Curufin fortified Aglon, and held it with great strength, and all the land of Himlad southward, between the river Aros that rose in Dorthonion, and his tributary Kelon that came from Himring. Between the arms of Gelion was the ward of Maglor, and here in one place the hills failed altogether. There it was that the orcs came into East Beleriand before the third battle. Therefore the Noldor held strength of cavalry in the plains at that place, and the people of Carinthia fortified the mountains to the east of Maglor's gap. There Mount Rerir, and about it many lesser heights, stood out from the main range of Ered Lindon westward. And in the angle between Rerir and Ered Lindon there was a lake shadowed by mountains on all sides save the south. That was Lake Hellevorn, deep and dark, and beside it Carinthia had his abode. But all the great land between Gelion and the mountains, and between Rerir and the river Askar, was called by the Noldor Thargelion, which signifies the land beyond Gelion, or Dor Carinthia, the land of Carinthia. And it was here that the Noldor first met the dwarves. But Thargelion was before called by the grey elves Talath Runan, the East Vale. Thus the sons of Feanor, under Maedhros, were the lords of East Beleriand, but their people were in that time mostly in the north of the land, and southward they rode only to hunt in the greenwoods. But there Amrod and Amras had their abode, and they came seldom northward while the siege lasted. And there also other of the elf lords would ride at times, even from afar, for the land was wild, but very fair. Of these Finrod Felagund came most often, for he had great love of wandering, and he came even into Osiriand, and won the friendship of the green elves. But none of the Noldor went ever over Ered Lindon while their realm lasted, and little news and late came into Beleriand of what passed in the regions of the east. Of the Noldor in Beleriand. It has been told how, by the guidance of Ulmo, Turgon of Nevrast discovered the hidden vale of Tumladen, and that, as was after known, lay east of the upper waters of Sirion, in a ring of mountains tall and sheer, and no living thing came there save the eagles of Thorondor. But there was a deep way under the mountains, delved in the darkness of the world, by waters that flowed out to join the streams of Sirion. And this way Turgon found, and so came to the green plain amid the mountains, and saw the island hill that stood there of hard, smooth stone. For the vale had been a great lake in ancient days. Then Turgon knew that he had found the place of his desire, and he resolved to build there a fair city, a memorial of Tirion upon Tunnar. But he returned to Nevrast and remained there in peace, though he pondered ever in his thought how he should accomplish his design. Now, after the Dagor Aglareb, the unquiet that Ulmo set in his heart returned to him, and he summoned many of the hardiest and most skilled of his people, and led them secretly to the Hidden Vale. And there they began the building of the city that Turgon had devised. And they set a watch all about it, that none might come upon their work from without, and the power of Ulmo that ran in Sirion protected them. But Turgon dwelt still, for the most part, in Nevrast, until it came to pass that at last the city was full wrought, after 2 and 50 years of secret toil. It is said that Turgon appointed its name to be Ondolinde, in the speech of the elves of Valinor, the rock of the music of water, for there were fountains upon the hill. But in the Sindarin tongue, the name was changed, and it became Gondolin, the hidden rock. Then Turgon prepared to depart from Nevrast and leave his halls in Vinyamar beside the sea. And there Ulmo came to him once again and spoke with him, and he said, "Now thou shalt go at last to Gondolin, Turgon, and I will maintain my power in the Vale of Sirion, and in all the waters therein, so that none shall mark thy going, nor shall any find there the hidden entrance against thy will. Longest of all the realms of the Eldalir shall Gondolin stand against Melkor. But love not too well the work of thy hands, and the devices of thy heart, and remember that the true hope of the Noldor lieth in the west, and cometh from the sea." And Ulmo warned Turgon that he also lay under the doom of Mandos, which Ulmo had no power to remove. "Thus it may come to pass," he said, "that the curse of the Noldor shall find thee too ere the end, and treason awake within thy walls. Then they shall be in peril of fire. But if this peril draweth nigh indeed, then even from Nevrast one shall come to warn thee, and from him beyond ruin and fire hope shall be born for elves and men. Leave therefore in this house arms and a sword, that in years to come he may find them, and thus shalt thou know him, and not be deceived." And Ulmo declared to Turgon of what kind and stature should be the helm and mail and sword that he left behind. Then Ulmo returned to the sea, and Turgon sent forth all his people, even to a third part of the Noldor, of Fingolfin's following, and a yet greater host of the Sindar. And they passed away, company by company, secretly, under the shadows of Ered Wethrin, and they came unseen to Gondolin, and none knew whither they had gone. And last of all, Turgon arose, and went with his household silently through the hills, and passed the gates in the mountains, and they were shut behind him. Through many long years none passed inward thereafter, save Húrin and Húor only. And the host of Turgon came never forth again until the year of lamentation, after 350 years and more. But behind the circle of the mountains the people of Turgon grew and throve, and they put forth their skill in labour unceasing, so that Gondolin upon Amon Gwareth became fair indeed, and fit to compare even with Elvan Tirion beyond the sea. High and white were its walls, and smooth its stairs, and tall and strong was the tower of the king. There shining fountains played, and in the courts of Turgon stood images of the trees of old, which Turgon himself wrought with elven craft. And the tree which he made of gold was named Glingal, and the tree whose flowers he made of silver was named Belthil. But fairer than all the wonders of Gondolin was Idril, Turgon's daughter, she that was called Celebrindal, the Silverfoot, whose hair was as the gold of Laurelin before the coming of Melkor. Thus Turgon lived long in bliss, but Nevrast was desolate and remained empty of living folk until the ruin of Beleriand. Now, while the city of Gondolin was building in secret, Finrod Felagund wrought in the deep places of Nargothrond. But Galadriel, his sister, dwelt, as has been told, in Thingol's realm in Doriath. And at times Melian and Galadriel would speak together of Valinor and the bliss of old. But beyond the dark hour of the death of the trees, Galadriel would not go, but ever fell silent. And on a time Melian said, "There is some woe that lies upon you and your kin. That I can see in you, but all else is hidden from me, for by no vision or thought can I perceive anything that passed or passes in the west. A shadow lies over all the land of Ammon, and reaches far out over the sea. Why will you not tell me more?" "For that woe is past," said Galadriel, "and I would take what joy is here left untroubled by memory, and maybe there is woe enough yet to come, though still hope may seem bright." Then Melian looked in her eyes and said, "I believe not that the Noldor came forth as messengers of the Valar, as was said at first, not though they came in the very hour of our need. For they speak never of the Valar, nor have their high lords brought any message to Thingol, whether from Manwë, or Ulmo, or even from Olwë, the king's brother, and his own folk that went over the sea. For what cause, Galadriel, were the high people of the Noldor driven forth as exiles from Ammon? Or what evil lies on the sons of Feanor, that they are so haughty and so fell? Do I not strike near the truth?"
"Near," said Galadriel,
"save that we were not driven forth, but came of our own will, and against that of the Valar. And through great peril, and in despite of the Valar, for this purpose we came, to take vengeance upon Morgoth, and regain what he stole." Then Galadriel spoke to Melian of the Silmarils, and of the slaying of King Finwë at Formanos, but still she said no word of the oath, nor of the kinslaying, nor of the burning of the ships at Loscar. But Melian said, "Now much you tell me, and yet more I perceive. A darkness you would cast over the long road from Tirion, but I see evil there, which Thingol should learn for his guidance."
"Maybe," said Galadriel, "but not of me."
And Melian spoke then no more of these matters with Galadriel, but she told to King Thingol all that she had heard of the Silmarils.
"This is a great matter," she said, "greater indeed than the Noldor themselves understand, for the light of Ammon and the fate of Arda lie locked now in these things, the work of Feanor, who is gone. They shall not be recovered, I foretell, by any power of the Eldar, and the world shall be broken in battles that are to come ere they are wrested from Morgoth. See now, Feanor they have slain, and many another, as I guess. But first of all the deaths they have brought, and yet shall bring, was Finwë, your friend. Morgoth slew him ere he fled from Ammon."
Then Thingol was silent, being filled with grief and foreboding. But at length he said, "Now at last I understand the coming of the Noldor out of the west, at which I wondered much before. Not to our aid did they come, save by chance. For those that remain in Middle-earth, the Valar will leave to their own devices until the uttermost need. For vengeance and redress of their loss, the Noldor came. Yet all the more sure shall they be as allies against Morgoth, with whom it is not now to be thought that they shall ever make treaty." But Melian said, "Truly for these causes they came, but for others also. Beware of the sons of Feanor. The shadow of the wrath of the Valar lies upon them, and they have done evil, I perceive, both in Ammon and to their own kin. A grief but lulled to sleep lies between the princes of the Noldor." And Thingol answered, "What is that to me? Of Feanor I have heard but report, which makes him great indeed. Of his sons I hear little to my pleasure, yet they are likely to prove the deadliest foes of our foe."
"Their swords and their counsels shall have two edges, said Melian.
And afterwards they spoke no more of this matter. It was not long before whispered tales began to pass among the Sindar concerning the deeds of the Noldor ere they came to Beleriand. Certain it is whence they came, and the evil truth was enhanced and poisoned by lies. But the Sindar were yet unwary and trustful of words, and, as may well be thought, Morgoth chose them for this first assault of his malice, for they knew him not. And Círdan, hearing these dark tales, was troubled, for he was wise and perceived swiftly that true or false they were put about at this time through malice, though the malice he deemed was that of the princes of the Noldor, because of the jealousy of their houses. Therefore he sent messengers to Thingol to tell all that he had heard. It chanced that at the time the sons of Finarfin were again the guests of Thingol, for they wished to see their sister Galadriel. Then Thingol, being greatly moved, spoke in anger to Finrod, saying, "Ill have you done to me, kinsman, to conceal so great matters from me, for now I have learned of all the evil deeds of the Noldor." But Finrod answered, "What ill have I done you, lord? Or what evil deed have the Noldor done in all your realm to grieve you? Neither against your kingship nor against any of your people have they thought evil or done evil." "I marvel at you, son of Eowyn," said Thingol, "that you would come to the board of your kinsmen thus red-handed from the slaying of your mother's kin, and yet say naught in defence nor yet seek any pardon." Then Finrod was greatly troubled, but he was silent, for he could not defend himself save by bringing charges against the other princes of the Noldor, and that he was loath to do before Thingol. But in Angrod's heart the memory of the words of Caranthia welled up again in bitterness, and he cried, "Lord, I know not what lies you have heard, nor whence, but we came not red-handed. Guiltless we came forth, save maybe of folly, to listen to the words of fell Feanor, and become as if besotted with wine, and as briefly. No evil did we do on our road, but suffered ourselves great wrong, and forgave it. For this we are named tale-bearers to you, and treasonable to the Noldor, untruly, as you know. For we have of our loyalty been silent before you, and thus earned your anger. But now these charges are no longer to be borne, and the truth you shall know." Then Angrod spoke bitterly against the sons of Feanor, telling of the blood at Alquilonde, and the doom of Mandos, and the burning of the ships at Losgar, and he cried, "Wherefore should we that endured the grinding ice bear the name of kinslayers and traitors?"
"Yet the shadow of Mandos lies on you also," said Melian.
But Thingol was long silent ere he spoke. "Go now," he said, "for my heart is hot within me. Later you may return if you will, for I will not shut my doors for ever against you, my kindred, that were ensnared in an evil that you did not aid. With Fingolfin and his people also I will keep friendship, for they have bitterly atoned for such ill as they did, and in our hatred of the power that wrought all this woe, our griefs shall be lost. But hear my words. Never again in my ears shall be heard the tongue of those who slew my kin in Alquilonde, nor in all my realm shall it be openly spoken while my power endures, and all the Sindor shall hear my command that they shall neither speak with the tongue of the Noldor nor answer to it. And all such as use it shall be held slayers of kin and betrayers of kin unrepentant." Then the sons of Finarfin departed from Menegroth with heavy hearts, perceiving how the words of Mandos would ever be made true, and that none of the Noldor that followed after Feanor could escape from the shadow that lay upon his house. And it came to pass even as Thingol had spoken, for the Sindar heard his word, and thereafter throughout Beleriand they refused the tongue of the Noldor, and shunned those that spoke it aloud. But the exiles took the Sindarin tongue in all their daily uses,
and the high speech of the West were spoken only by the lords of the Noldor among themselves. Yet that speech lived ever as a language of lore wherever any of that people dwelt. It came to pass that Nargothrond was full wrought, and yet Turgon still dwelt in the halls of Vinyamar, and the sons of Finarfin were gathered there to a feast, and Galadriel came from Doriath and dwelt a while in Nargothrond. Now King Finrod Felagund had no wife, and Galadriel asked him why this should be. But foresight came upon Felagund as she spoke, and he said, "An oath I too shall swear, and must be free to fulfill it, and go into darkness. Nor shall anything of my realm endure that a son should inherit." But it is said that not until that hour had such cold thoughts ruled him. For indeed, she whom he had loved was Amaria of the Vanyar, and she went not with him into exile. Of Maeglin. Arathel Arfeniel, the White Lady of the Noldor, daughter of Fingolfin, dwelt in Nevrast with Turgon her brother, and she went with him to the Hidden Kingdom. But she wearied of the guarded city of Gondolin, desiring ever the longer, the more to ride again in the wide lands, and to walk in the forests, as had been her wont in Valinor. And when 200 years had passed since Gondolin was full wrought, she spoke to Turgon and asked leave to depart. Turgon was loath to grant this, and long denied her. But at the last he yielded, saying, "Go then if you will, though it is against my wisdom, and I forebode that ill will come of it both to you and to me. But you shall go only to seek Fingon, our brother, and those that I send with you shall return hither to Gondolin as swiftly as they may." But Arathel said, "I am your sister, and not your servant, and beyond your bounds. I will go as seems good to me, and if you begrudge me an escort, then I will go alone." Then Turgon answered, "I grudge you nothing that I have. Yet I desire that none shall dwell beyond my walls who know the way hither, and if I trust you, my sister, others I trust less to keep guard on their tongues." And Turgon appointed 3 lords of his household to ride with Arathel, and he bid them lead her to Fingon in Hithlum, if they might prevail upon her. "And be wary," he said, "for though Morgoth be yet hemmed in the north, there are many perils in Middle-earth of which the lady knows nothing." Then Arathel departed from Gondolin, and Turgon's heart was heavy at her going. But when she came to the ford of Brithiach in the river Sirion, she said to her companions, "Turn now south and not north, for I will not ride to Hithlum. My heart desires rather to find the sons of Feanor, my friends of old." And since she could not be dissuaded, they turned south as she commanded, and sought admittance into Doriath. But the march wardens denied them, for Thingol would suffer none of the Noldor to pass the girdle, save his kinsfolk of the house of Finarfin, and least of all those that were friends of the sons of Feanor. Therefore the march wardens said to Arathel, "To the land of Celegorm for which you seek, lady, you may by no means pass through the realm of King Thingol. You must ride beyond the girdle of Melian to the south or to the north. The speediest way is by the paths that lead east from the Brithiach, through Dimbar, and along the north march of this kingdom, until you pass the bridge of Esgalduin, and the fords of Aros, and come to the lands that lie behind the hill of Himring. There dwell, as we believe, Celegorm and Curufin, and it may be that you will find them, but the road is perilous." Then Arathel turned back and sought the dangerous road between the haunted valleys of Ered Gorgoroth and the north fences of Doriath. And as they drew near to the evil region of Nan Dun Gortheb, the riders became enmeshed in shadows, and Arathel strayed from her companions and was lost. They sought long for her in vain, fearing that she had been ensnared or had drunk from the poisoned streams of that land. But the fell creatures of Ungoliant that dwelt in the ravines were aroused and pursued them, and they hardly escaped with their lives. When at last they returned and their tale was told, there was great sorrow in Gondolin, and Turgon sat long alone, enduring grief and anger in silence. But Arathel, having sought in vain for her companions, rode on, for she was fearless and hardy of heart, as were all the children of Finwë. And she held on her way, and crossing Esgalduin and Aros, came to the land of Himlad between Aros and Kelon, where Celegorm and Curufin dwelt in those days, before the breaking of the siege of Angband. At that time they were from home, riding with Caranthia east in Thargelion. But the people of Celegorm welcomed her, and bade her stay among them with honour until their lord's return. There for a while she was content, and had great joy in wandering free in the woodlands. But as the year lengthened and Celegorm did not return, she became restless again, and took to riding alone ever further abroad, seeking for new paths and untrodden glades. Thus it chanced in the waning of the year that Arathel came to the south of Himlad, and passed over Kelon, and before she was aware, she was enmeshed in Nan Elmoth. In that wood, in ages past, Melian walked in the twilight of Middle-earth, when the trees were young and enchantment lay upon it still. But now the trees of Nan Elmoth were the tallest and darkest in all Beleriand, and there the sun never came. And there Eol dwelt, who was named the Dark Elf. Of old he was the kin of Thingol, but he was restless and ill at ease in Doriath. And when the girdle of Melian was set about the forest of Region, where he dwelt, he fled thence to Nan Elmoth. There he lived in deep shadow, loving the night and the twilight under the stars. He shunned the Noldor, holding them to blame for the return of Morgoth to trouble the quiet of Beleriand. But for the dwarves, he had more liking than any other of the elven folk of old. From him, the dwarves learned much of what passed in the lands of the Eldar. Now the traffic of the dwarves down from the Blue Mountains followed two roads across East Beleriand, and the northern way, going towards the fords of Aros, passed nigh to Nan Elmoth. And there Eol would meet the Naugrim and hold converse with them. And as their friendship grew, he would at times go and dwell as guest in the deep mansions of Nogrod, or Belagost. There he learned much of metalwork, and came to great skill therein, and he devised a metal as hard as the steel of the dwarves, but so malleable that he could make it thin and supple, and yet it remained resistant to all blades and darts. He named it Galvorn, for it was black and shining like jet, and he was clad in it whenever he went abroad. But Eol, though stooped by his smithwork, was no dwarf, but a tall elf of a high kin of the Teleri, noble, though grim of face, and his eyes could see deep into shadows and dark places. And it came to pass that he saw Arathel Arfaniel, as she strayed among the tall trees near the borders of Nan Elmoth, a gleam of white in the dim land. Very fair she seemed to him, and he desired her. And he set his enchantments about her, so that she could not find the ways out, but drew ever nearer to his dwelling in the depths of the wood. There were his smithy and his dim halls, and such servants as he had, silent and secret as their master. And when Arathel, weary with wandering, came at last to his doors, he revealed himself, and he welcomed her, and led her into his house. And there she remained. For Eol took her to wife, and it was long ere any of her kin heard of her again. It is not said that Arathel was wholly unwilling, nor that her life in Nan Elmoth was hateful to her for many years. For though at Eol's command she must shun the sunlight, they wandered far together under the stars, or by the light of the sickle moon, or she might fare alone as she would, save that Eol forbade her to seek the sons of Feanor or any others of the Noldor. And Arathel bore to Eol a son in the shadows of Nan Elmoth, and in her heart she gave him a name in the forbidden tongue of the Noldor, Lomien, that signifies Child of the Twilight. But his father gave him no name until he was 12 years old. Then he called him Maeglin, which is Sharp Glance, for he perceived that the eyes of his son were more piercing than his own, and his thought could read the secrets of hearts beyond the mist of words. As Maeglin grew to full stature, he resembled in face and form rather his kindred of the Noldor, but in mood and mind he was the son of his father.